realfaith.org.au.
I said to the guy, you've got to pay these people. He's like, no, the market's doing this, the market's doing that. You know, next month it'll be fine. And money came into the company and I said to him, look, I can't handle this anymore. Can I use this to pay people just this once? And he said, yes, do that, because he didn't care. And I used that money to pay people. Now, I didn't realise just how serious that was, because I didn't actually steal it. But that was a breach of the Corporations Act. I just caved under pressure.
Welcome to Real Faith. Conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through. Helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's Real People, Real Life, and Real Faith with Eric Scatterbo.
Trish Jenkins was living a comfortable life as a wife and a mother of three when suddenly, through a series of events, she found herself sentenced to 8 months in prison, living among some of society's most dangerous criminals. She has written about her experiences that have changed her life forever in a book called Treasures of Darkness, A Prison Journey. Welcome to the program, Trish Jenkins.
Thank you, Eric. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. And let's find out, what was life like before being sentenced to prison? What was happening then?
Well, we were active in our church. I have a husband and three little girls. And life was going fairly well. We were property investors and looking at what we could do to get ahead. And we were great givers in our church too. We had a vision for building that and moving things forward.
So that was your heart's desire. You had sincere motives going into all this.
Oh, yes. And I think that's actually what caused me to not discern the way that I should have.
Okay. What happened?
Well, I met a fellow who was a currency trader, and we invested with him, and that went well. And he had created a managed fund that was approved by the ASIC, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission.
So everything's checking out.
Well, I was already invested with him while he was applying to do that, and he did get approval for that, which actually reassured me, because I thought, well, if the Australian Securities and Investments Commission have approved him, then, you know, that's just more reassurance. And I was an investor initially, and then he asked me if I could be a contact person for the investors, because he just couldn't take the phone calls and deal with all the people. He just wanted to be left alone to trade and to do what needed to be done.
So it was going so well that he actually needed more help. So that's
exactly
a sign that this is a really good thing. This is prosperous.
Exactly, because he was growing and it was doing mm-hmm. well. And, you know, I'm pretty good with people. And, you know, anything that I care about, you know, you want people to do well. You want people to benefit. And so I became the contact person for him. Like in a managed fund, it's called an authorized representative. And so that's what happened. And people would invest with him, and that went well. And he would pay an interest return each month. It wasn't guaranteed, but it was fairly consistent.
So you were an investor as well. So you wanted this to succeed. Is that right?
Yes. I was totally committed. And, you know, my husband and I really did believe that this was a blessing from God, you know, for all our giving that we had done over the years. And, you know, he'd done well in real estate. And so we just thought, well, we were being sensible and diversifying by not just having everything in real estate. So we'd invested in this.
And you believe that God had provided this opportunity?
I did. Yes, I did. And I think that assumption is, and a lot of people do this when they want something to be from God especially, and they believe that it is, they can be a little more lenient in their due diligence of a project or something that they want to get into, whether it be an investment or even a relationship. When you believe it's from God, you'll overlook things that you otherwise might notice.
Yeah, so what happened?
Well, it went well for a year and a half, and then suddenly he stopped paying. And it was my job to respond to the investors who were becoming worried and frightened and demanding. So for a period of months, 3 months at least, there was no money being paid, and it wasn't guaranteed, so that could happen, but people had become used to this money coming in and become dependent on it, and which is where I learned a very good lesson in anything to do with investing. Never invest more than you can afford to lose. If I can get that across to people, then that'll be worthwhile, this whole interview. But, you know, people were very dependent on it and became very frightened, and you know, the only thing people care about more than their health is their money. And so, you know, they were contacting me and they were calling, emailing, turning up at my house. They were asking, begging, demanding money, becoming quite aggressive. And, you know, I just couldn't take it anymore. My resilience was eroded. My own fears about what was going on was being undermined. And after a while of me having to deal with this, and I said to the guy, you've got to pay these people. He's like, no, the market's doing this, the market's doing that. You know, next month it'll be fine. And money came into the company and I said to him, look, I can't handle this anymore. Can I use this to pay people just this once? Just this once. There's plenty of people whose just this once has ruined their lives. And he said, yes, do that, because he didn't care. And I used that money to pay people. Now, I knew it wasn't the right way to do it. I knew I shouldn't. It wasn't quite right. I didn't realize just how serious that was, because I didn't actually steal it. I just misused it. I paid people with it. But, Eric, that was a breach of the Corporations Act. And the road to hell is paved with good intentions, and there's no excuse for it apart from that I just caved under pressure. And I paid people, and eventually the whole thing collapsed because the ASIC stepped in and it was discovered that he was a con artist, a crook, and the whole thing turned out to be a great Ponzi scheme, which, as people may know, is when your own money is actually being given back to you and you think it's the investment, but really it's just turning money over, and eventually it implodes.
Wow. So this whole time here, you were sincerely investing your own money in this and helping other people, or you thought you were helping other people. They were getting some return in the beginning, which is part of the con to kind of get people suckered in.
That's right.
But then all of a sudden the money stopped.
Yes. And then, you know, you're praying and, you know, you're thinking, well, you know, it's not guaranteed, so you can't expect it all the time, but it just stopped blank and there was no more and there was just excuses. And eventually it all just fell over, as these things do. And it was devastating, and particularly because, you know, when you think something's from God and it collapses, who do you blame? Well, a lot of people think, well, I can't be wrong. It must be God who's let me down. Well, it's never God who lets us down. It's always our own failings that do that. And that's what happened with us. And we lost everything. We were put through a liquidation and lost, you know, everything we owned, our home. And then I had to get a new job where my money just went towards paying lawyers.
So on the one hand, you're finding out that you were conned. And also, you were representing a con man. I mean, that must have been devastating.
When I found out the money was gone, I threw up for 3 days straight. I couldn't even look at my children. I was just horrified. How could I miss it? It was just the worst thing ever.
Now, how do these con men work? Don't they think they're going to get found out?
Look, I've since written 2 books on fraud warning signals in finance and relationships. And in this particular case, very often when it's about finance, these guys have so much confidence in their superior intelligence and they lack empathy. Often they're sociopaths and it's a game for them. And, you know, you're fair game, that it's just part of how it's played. And, you know, it's eat or be eaten for them. And they will do whatever they need to. And they're chameleons. You know, these guys, they don't look like slick con artists. They don't look like a car salesman. They will listen to your conversation and they'll listen to your politics, your opinions on things, the things that you care about, your religion, and they will mirror back to you things in common. And it doesn't just happen with churches. It happens with all sorts of social clubs, service clubs. It's called affiliate fraud, where they win you over and you think that, well, he's one of us. And that reduces your objectivity when it comes to doing due diligence. So
he basically won your confidence in him.
Well, that's why they're called confidence men, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's right. That's
exactly
right. And women, too.
So basically, as the Bible says, beware of wolves in sheep's clothing.
Absolutely.
You realize that you had trusted somebody who was basically a wolf in sheep's clothing. But also, due to the circumstances you were in, it sounds like you decided to take a shortcut that wasn't right.
I tried to solve a problem that wasn't mine to solve. And I think a lot of people do that, and it ends up making a bigger mess, you know, instead of making the harder decisions earlier. And you know, it's easy to look back and say, oh, I should have seen this and I should have seen that. But sometimes you just don't know what you don't know. And that's why I wrote my books, to give people checklists and questions to ask. I've actually got a section of a chapter for churches on wolves in sheep's clothing, because even when they're in churches, they actually have a pattern of behavior.
But this sounds like just the way the devil wants to entrap us. I mean, he wants us to have good intentions, get involved in things which look like nice investments or whatever, but then you get kind of into it and you're maybe getting used to the money and the success and the prosperity, and maybe just take this one little compromise and things will be fine. Is that fair to say?
Well, it is, and that compromise doesn't usually just happen. Usually there's a certain amount of pressure involved which squeezes your perspective, so that you think, well, okay, you can get to the point where you feel like you actually don't have a choice. Now, you will have a choice, but in a clear head and a full tummy and when everything's, you know, in the cold light of day, sure, you would never do that. But what people don't realize is when they're extremely stressed and pressured, that objectivity is compromised, and what you see as a way out, and people do this with their marriages. They're so unhappy that they think stepping out of it is the only way. It's why people commit suicide and think they're doing it their family a service. Their mind is distorted and they cannot see what's really going on, and they don't realize the ramifications. All they see is this one little light of hope of, if I just do this, it will solve things temporarily. And of course it doesn't.
Our guest today is Trish Jenkins. She's the author of the book, Treasure of Darkness, A Prison Journey. We're going to take a break, and when we return, we'll find out what her journey in prison was like and what we can learn from her experiences. That and more when we return right here on Real Faith.
The Word for Today is Australia's most widely read daily devotional, designed to give you practical teaching to keep you focused on your relationship with Jesus. Read it online or subscribe to the free printed edition at thewordfortoday.com.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and today our guest is Trish Jenkins. She's the author of the book, Treasures of Darkness, A Prison Journey. And before the break, we found out how she was conned and actually violated some laws in her business, in her work, and was sentenced to 8 months in prison. What happened next in your journey, Trish Jenkins?
Well, we went through a liquidation where we lost everything, and the offense was 2005. And it wasn't actually until January 2009 that my court date came up to receive a penalty. And that could have been a fine. But if you remember 2008, that was the global financial crisis. Everybody was particularly touchy about anything to do with money. And, you know, I got the maximum. And that was a head sentence of 2.5 years suspended after 8 months. So the best part of a year, I was taken away from my family.
Wow. So talk about rocking your world. You're a wife, a mother of three, and then finding out that you're going to be in jail.
It was just, it was another world. You know, in my prayer time before I went in and I was facing all of this, every time I went to prayer or every time I got prayer, you know, the Lord would say, trust me, it's going to be okay. Now, you know, God's version of okay and our version of okay are not always the same.
Not exactly the same.
Not always the same. And he said, it's going to be okay. And very close to the date in my prayer time, I just felt him say to me, you are going to go in, but I'm going to be with you and it's going to be okay. And I surrendered to that peace. You know, in Job gets to the point of, though he slay me, yet I will praise him. And I had to get to that point of total surrender with God, saying, God, I don't want to go to jail. I'd been believing God. I'd been doing everything I could to avoid it. And I said, but God, if this is part of your plan for me, then I will surrender to that. But you have got to show up. And he did.
Okay, we're going to find out exactly how he did. But, you know, when I think of somebody committing what would probably be considered a white-collar crime, you think maybe there's a separate place for them, that you'd be in more of a cushy type area in prison for white-collar criminals who have financial crimes. But you were right in with the most hardened criminals in society. Is that right?
Yes. Look, there is. There is another section, but everybody goes into general population to start with. Everybody's in with everybody.
So there could be a mass murderer and they would be in the cell next to you?
Well, that's right. Well, they could be cell with you. You know, yeah, because there's overcrowding, so they would put another mattress on the floor next to the one that's there. And I've heard from a chaplain since that they now have bunk beds, so you've got two there plus another one on the floor. And I actually discovered later on when I came home, I Googled somebody's name and found out that they, you know, she had actually put an axe through her boyfriend's head, and she was one of my friends. And I knew she was messed up. I knew she had bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, but who doesn't in prison, pretty much? It's if you're not crazy before you go in, you're certainly crazy when you come out.
So you don't know what their crimes are when they're put in a cell next to you?
Only if they tell you, you know, if you're in conversation, but it's...
I see. But it's not like it's public knowledge.
No, no. Although you might read the paper and someone's name is in there. But, you know, a lot of people you do know... A lot of the people in there are single mothers who have cheated Centrelink on their fraudulent payments. You know, they'll have a boyfriend living with them while they're collecting single mother's benefits, and they'll go to prison for that if it adds up to a certain amount. There was another lady there, and a grandmother who was in prison because she was a pensioner, and her husband had a little cash job on the side doing people's gardens, and they were both sentenced to 4 months because they had defrauded Centrelink. That really shocked me.
And then they're in next to hardened criminals and
yes, they are
murderers and
they are.
Oh wow!
Now,
I'm just trying to get my head around this. Here you were, a Christian woman, sincerely trying to make some investments, but then through the series of events that we discussed, find yourself kind of entrapped in this situation, and then made this compromise. And now all of a sudden, you're making friends with an axe murderer.
Well, look, I think it was actually a hammer, not an axe. But, you know, he ended up dead.
However
that happens. But look, Eric, you know, I did what I did. I knew I shouldn't do what I did, but I did it anyway. So regardless of how many excuses I can make, I caved under pressure and I failed. And I had a price to pay.
But we can all relate to this because, I mean, who has not at some point in her life done something that they regret later?
Well, look, you take your eyes off the steering wheel, off the road for a few minutes, and you kill someone, you'll go to jail.
Yeah.
And who hasn't looked at the radio or, you know, done something? It's why it's called an accident, but there's a consequence. You know, I placed my life in God's hands. In my prayer time, I had said, God, whatever happens, whatever I'm given is going to be from you. As far as I was concerned, that judge had no say over my life. He was totally impotent. There was nothing that judge could say. And I had a tough judge. I found out later that if I'd had a different judge on the day, I would have got a different result, that I couldn't have got anything heavier than what he gave me. But I still say he had nothing to do with it, that my God had a plan. And he did, and that plan unfolded while I was incarcerated.
So you think God allowed the most serious sentence to be sentenced to you?
Yes, I do. Absolutely, I do. Now, he didn't make me commit a crime. You know, I did that all by myself.
Of course not, no.
Yeah, I did that all by myself. But God used that. You know, Romans 8:28 says he makes all things work together for our good. Now, it doesn't happen automatically. We've got to work with him. Mm-hmm. But I had to trust him. Totally submitted to what he would do and work with. I mean, I did say, God, if I go in, you have to show up. And he did. And I had to make sure that I went through that. You know, I had a phone call with my husband in the yard. We have these 10-minute timed phone calls. And I'm there on the phone, and And my husband is just heroic. You know, if he actually asked if he could have gone to jail instead of me, and I said, oh, no, sweetheart, you're way too pretty.
Wow.
You're way too pretty. It's best if I go in. And, you know, and he was feeling discouraged and he was feeling.
Yeah, I was going to say, how is he feeling about all this?
Oh, you know, he worked his guts out to and spent everything that he earned, he paid to lawyers to keep his wife out of jail. You know, another man might have said, look, you've done this. They're not touching my money. You know, you're on your own, sweetheart, and I'm taking the kids. And plenty of men might do that, but not this one. Justin is just, you know, I fell in love with him all over again. He just rose to the occasion. But, you know, he was doing it tough and he was feeling frustrated and angry. And I said to him, sweetheart, you know what? We're going to go through it anyway. And we have to go through this as best we know how with God. Because if we don't, it'll be wasted. And I couldn't bear to go through all this for God not to do something with it, to have it wasted. You know, you can't waste a good adversity. You know, whatever you're going through, don't waste it on self-pity and anger. Get with God and go through it with him.
I want to just repeat that line. Don't waste a good adversity. Personally, I'm not really looking for adversity, but it's going to come whether we want to or not. But that's a good point. Don't waste it.
Look, you can do it the hard way or the harder way, you know, and it's going to be tough. But when you go through it with Jesus, there are some precious things that come out of it. You know, that's why I called my book Treasures of Darkness. It's from Isaiah 45, verse 3, which says, I will give you the treasures of darkness and hidden riches of secret places that you would know that I, the Lord, am the God of Israel, who calls you by name. Treasure is not found out in the open. It's found in the dark places.
And you have a saying regarding the word testimony?
Yes. You know, without the test, all you're left with is a moany. You're just going to moan. So, you know, you have a testimony because you've been through a test.
Yes, I had never thought about it that way. But yes, adversity is going to be in our lives. We are going to have times of testing. That's just part of life. But God is always with us through it all.
He is.
And talking about a test, you experienced a bit of culture shock. All of a sudden living with hardened criminals, that was not the usual type of culture you were used to living in, to say the least. Is that right?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, I'd met really rough people before. You know, they would come to church and we would help them and they'd meet Jesus and they would give a testimony of how, you know, how hard they were and, you know, crime and different things, but they love Jesus. And it's like I was looking at their before photo, you know, I was with their before shot. And, you know, I went in there and it was a culture shock. You know, it was the twilight zone. And one of my, like, I knew, I'm a natural encourager anyway, and I knew, look, I've had 20 years of business and professional development and spiritual development, and I knew the most important thing was to protect my mind. And I already had some strategies that I knew would be helpful. I tested everything got tested and some stuff just turned out to be rubbish. It doesn't work. But I knew that I had to watch the words of my mouth and what I thought about. And I became an encourager. And the thing is, you know, you're looking at us and them. And suddenly, I was them. I look down, I'm in the same uniform. I was one of them. I was prisoner DL4257.
Well, the phrase that keeps coming to my mind as I'm listening to Trish Jenkins share is the phrase, there but for the grace of God, go I. Because who of us has not made a mistake, made some type of a compromise that we regretted later? And of course, as we're hearing, Trish Jenkins is really suffering the consequences for the mistake she made. We'll find out more about her time in prison next time and how God is now using her to help others. Meanwhile, you can learn more about author and speaker Trish Jenkins at her website, TrishJenkinsFaith.com. That's TrishJenkinsFaith.com. You can go there and learn about her book, Treasures of Darkness, A Prison Journey. Once again, we'll hear more of her story next time right here on Real Faith.
You've been listening to Real Faith. And if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.